Black are gold pants, black are gold pants, black are gold.
Basketball.
Black are gold pants, basketball podcast. Black are gold pants, basketball. Black are gold pants, basketball podcast. We're talking basketball on the podcast. Black or gold pants basketball podcast with Black Heart and Gold Pants to talk about the basketball team. We're not that good at basketball. Black or gold pants.
Black Heart Gold Podcast, episode 49, one before the Big 5-0, which we're just going to refer to as Black Heart Gold Podcast L. Pat Vent, Adam Jacoby. Adam, what's shaking?
Nothing is shaking at the moment. There is no activity on the seismograph. All clear from the seismologists. The shaking is negative.
Well, I'm glad to hear that Indianola is stable.
For now.
For now. Just you wait, though. We're joined tonight to talk a little Big Ten basketball with Eamon Brennan of ESPN. Eamon is a Iowa native and an Indiana grad and covers all of the Big Ten for the Worldwide Leader. Eamon, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I think I misspoke there. You cover everything of everybody.
Big
Ten.
Right. No, I do national stuff, but, game coverage, that sort of thing. It's just easier to send me because I'm in Chicago. We have kind of a regional setup as far as that stuff goes. So you're like half right, probably.
Now, clearly the big story in the conference this week, Trevor Mbakwe from Minnesota was arrested for violating a some sort of protective order by posting something on Facebook.
What did he post, Eamon? That's what I want to know.
We found that out today in Minnesota, or I guess late last night. Minnesota released a statement saying they weren't going to suspend him, and then they released the Facebook message that he wrote, and it was basically, hey, what's up? I know you don't want me to contact you, but I just wanted to say I'm sorry how things turn out. And it was a very, polite, happy new year, and, I hope everything's well with you sort of ex-boyfriend message, which was basically the situation is, he and his ex-girlfriend had apparently dueling harassment restraining orders filed against each other. I'm not sure how long ago it was, but it was sort of just apparently the messiest breakup of all time. I don't really know what the whole situation was with that, but because he had this harassment restraining order filed against him, he wasn't allowed to contact her in any way, leaving this message on her Facebook wall. Apparently qualified, she called the police, and the police arrested him under the terms of his restraining order. Personally, I think Minnesota's probably making the right decision here. When you see the message that he left, I mean, yes, it's, if you're legally not allowed to talk to somebody, then don't send them a message on Facebook, but it wasn't like he was actually harassing. At least it didn't seem like harassing, and obviously we don't know all the details of their relationship and all that good stuff, but it doesn't exactly seem like a suspension-worthy offense. Certainly not the best decision, but not the worst thing I've ever heard.
Right. So it wasn't exactly time to die.
Right. No, it wasn't like I'm outside your window right now,
Well, then, I think
anything
that,
like that.
Then that's probably the right decision. You're right that you never want to be to send the message ever that criminal activity towards people who are or have been, significant others with you or partners or however you want to put it. I mean, you never want to condone that, but this does seem like the mildest possible way or the most mildly possible, whatever, way to run afoul of that law.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like wasn't like he sent her, as far as we know, a gazillion text messages and was calling her all the time. And, you know, apparently that was part of the problem in the first place. Between both of them, I think there's some stuff has come out today that he had similar issues with her at one point in time. And so, I mean, I get all that. You don't want to be too lenient, and I think you can hedge it with the simple statement that obviously it's not a good idea to do any of this. Leave your ex-girlfriends on Facebook alone in the first place. You know, I mean, that's never a good idea whether you have a restraining order or not. But if you do and you can go to jail and spend the day in jail because of Facebook wall posts, maybe stay off of Facebook for a little while.
Well, if getting thrown in jail for a Facebook wall post was a suspendable offense, then neither Adam or I would ever have a job. So the word is today that he won't be suspended at all?
Yeah, I think that's what they're saying right now. I think the statement they released late last night, Tubby Smith basically said, you know, Trevor obviously made a dumb mistake, but after reviewing everything, we don't think it's, you know, worthwhile to suspend him. And then, it didn't say this in the statement, but from a common sense perspective, I mean, he did spend the night in jail, or spend the day in jail, because of it. So, I mean, in terms of punishment, I'd say that's probably about the worst you can do for a Facebook post of rather polite but ill-advised nature.
Yeah.
I'm seeing that he also lost his starter status, but I imagine that that won't be permanent.
Yeah, and he'll probably not start and then come in a few minutes and play, you know, 30, 35 minutes or whatever. So it's sort of a water under the bridge thing at this point for Minnesota, I think, which is huge for them because they've had their fair share of personnel issues, not only with him last year. He missed the whole year last year because of an unrelated situation in Miami in which he was accused of battery and eventually settled victim of diversion program. But he missed the entire year last year because of that, and they lost to Vo Joseph this season to transfer in the middle of the year. So Mbakwe is in serious legal trouble in this situation, then Minnesota's season is in serious jeopardy.
Now, the other big story off the court this week, Bill Carmody gets an extension at Northwestern. Carmody entered this year 23 under 500 overall in his 10 years in Evanston. He'd only finished in the top half of the Big Ten once. That was in 2003-2004. He had 2 years not that long ago where they really struggled. They went a combined 3-31 in the conference, but has made the NIT the last 2 years and has gotten what has been disclosed only to be a multi-year extension. Even does this make any sense?
It's a little confusing, that's for sure. I think... the common Northwestern fan perspective, from what I've seen, and I think it's probably a fair one, is that we like Bill Carmody. We think he's a smart coach, and we think that he, in general, does the right things, and he's a good representative with the sort of quirky offense and 1-3-1 defense, and we like him, but no one seems particularly pleased with the extension, and you can understand why. I mean, Northwestern's goal is to get to the NCAA tournament. They haven't done that. The past few years, they've had a good shot at it. They've come into the season with the expectations of, you know, oh, maybe this is a year. Northwestern has a pretty decent team this year. They could be the 6th or 7th team in the Big Ten and make the NCAA tournament. But, yeah, yes, the program's been horrible. Traditionally, obviously, they've never made an NCAA tournament. That goes without saying. But when you're setting your expectations that way and then not even achieving them at the end of the season in the first place, it might be time for a little bit of a change, and it's one of those things where it's sort of the safe play for Northwestern. You know, if you get rid of Carmody, then you can try and make a splash. I don't know if anyone's going to come to Northwestern based on that, but you can at least give it a shot, and you can roll the dice and see who's out there and see who's interested. And maybe you end up with a guy for 3 years who doesn't get the job done, and then you start over again. But based on where Northwestern's been for basically the entire time they've had a basketball team, that doesn't sound like the worst scenario ever, and at this point, I think Northwestern fans want to roll the dice because, you know, Northwestern's not doomed to be terrible forever. I mean, their football team can win. They've shown that in recent years, and in the past decade or so, they've been good off and on, and I don't think there's any reason why the basketball team can't be good. They're sort of in this, they seem to be in this weird place where they they're kind of like, oh, we're Northwestern. We, you know, maybe we'll make the tournament, but probably not. And the fans are kind of like that as well. And I feel like they can do better as a program.
What do you think about their tournament odds this year?
Not looking good right now. The problem partly is the non-conference schedule was so weak that they didn't really have a chance to get a quality win outside of the conference. And then once conference play started, they had a tough stretch to begin the season. Turned it around, obviously, against Indiana at home, but that's not exactly a tournament win. So, yeah, not good. They're going to have to, at this point, they'll have to exceed expectations within the Big Ten, maybe make a run in the Big Ten tournament. But their resume as it is right now with the non-conference schedule as weak as it was, the loss to St. John's, being their only chance to get a decent win outside the conference.
Bad loss to St. John's, too.
The loss to St. John's is a bummer. I mean, if they win that game, it's still not the greatest one in the world, but St. John's has done some things in the Big East recently, starting 3-1, beating, West Virginia away and Georgetown at home. That, you know, St. John's is a bubble team, tournament team. I think Lunardi has them in the bracket right now. So that would have been a decent win, and they didn't get that. And so, without anything in the non-conference, it's going to be tough on Selection Sunday if they don't make a legitimate case in the Big Ten. They haven't done that so far.
Yeah, Northwestern currently 10-4, 1-3 in the conference, soon to be 1-4, but we'll get to that a little bit later. Top of the standings right now, Ohio State, obviously, 16-0, 3-0 with the conference, and Purdue with 4 conference wins already and 15-1. Ohio State, you know, we've already seen them at Iowa. You know, Sullinger looks to be just incredible, and Kraft has been awfully good as well. Is this the best pairing of freshmen in the country?
It's hard to argue against Kentucky's Brandon Knight and Terrence Jones, because Jones is having a player of the year type season, and
yeah.
Knight is at this point a much better player than Aaron Kraft, a much more important player to his team. But Kraft has been very good. I think the important thing for Ohio State this year, because of the way the team is built, they're always gonna go big. They're gonna have Sullinger in the middle. They can team him with Lauderdale, and they have those sort of all very tall and sort of tweener wing guys on the wing with Buford, Diebler, and Lighty. But they, like last year, when Thad Matta just basically said, "Screw it, I'm making Evan Turner the point guard. I don't care what people think. It's gonna be awesome." I think that's kind of that he was leaning towards that this year, but he doesn't have a player singularly as good as Turner in the backcourt to make up for turnovers and all that sort of thing. So Kraft stepping into that, you know, that role of bring the ball up the floor, don't get rattled, and get it to the guys who are going to score, it's been pretty crucial. I mean, Kraft probably turns the ball over a little too much for what he's supposed to be doing on the court, but he's been good thus far, and he has a, you know, I mean, he's just one of those solid guys that's nice to have on your team and know that you can put the ball in his hands even as a freshman. He's going to be okay.
What do you make of Minnesota this year? I know that they're 1-3 in the Big Ten, but those 3 losses have been probably the worst part of their entire schedule. Are they legit?
You know, it's tough to say. It hurts losing Joseph because, you know, even with Al Nolan playing as well as he is, Joseph was a nice second fiddle in the backcourt, good shooter and all that. I think, Minnesota, for me, is maybe just a little bit overrated. I mean, if you look at their tempo free numbers and then, and their per possession stuff, they're just kind of good. And for a team that was ranked number 13, in the coaches poll, I think 2 weeks ago, before they sort of got into the meat of this Big Ten schedule here, I'm not sure they're quite that good. I think they're, you know, their sixth best team in the Big Ten, probably the sixth best team, and that's probably good enough to be an NCAA tournament team. I think they'll be well served by their wins over Western Kentucky, North Carolina, West Virginia, in Puerto Rico. But looking at those wins now, they're not as impressive as they were to start the season when Minnesota sort of jumped up in the rankings. So I think for me, they still have a lot to prove that it's a team that could be a dangerous team. They have a lot of size and some interesting players. But they really haven't put it together yet, and it's that point in the season when they're going to start to need to do that if they're going to get enough Big Ten wins to get NCAA tournament consideration.
You think they have a shot against Purdue tomorrow?
Well, it's at Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
I think they can, yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, Purdue has been playing really, really, really well. Purdue is pretty scary right now, actually. I'm kind of glad when Robbie Hummel got hurt, I'm kind of glad I didn't go with the typical Purdue screwed now sort of thing, because Juwan Johnson and Tor Moore have been fantastic. But I think they have a slight chance. It's not nearly 50-50 even at home, because Purdue's been playing so well, and Minnesota's a bit on the ropes. But, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if Minnesota won that game, let's say that.
Now, Illinois is kind of fascinating. They have shot the lights out of the gym twice this year to open conference play. As you cited a few days ago, and I think it was Gassaway who said it, they had an effective field goal percentage of 80% two times already, which is unheard of. And then they crapped the bed the other night against Penn State. So is this Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? Are they only able to win these games if they're shooting lights out, or are they a legitimate threat even if they aren't shooting 80%?
Well, the 80% effective field goal percentage is absolutely nuts. I mean, that never happens, let alone in the same league twice in a year, let alone to the same team. I mean, it's just sort of a freak statistical occurrence. I mean, this Illinois team needs to shoot the ball well to win, because for whatever reason they seem very allergic to either making more of their 17-foot jump shots, which is statistically the worst shot in college basketball, a long two-pointer. I think every high school coach has probably yelled that at his players 1,000 times in his life. It's not a smart shot, but the way Illinois runs their offense, they come off a lot of screens, they get a lot of jumpers from in that range. And if they made a little bit more of those three-point attempts, if they attempted three-pointers more frequently instead of those shots, they'd be in a little bit better shape. Or if they had guys in the post who could score on the block and get easy buckets. They don't really have that despite all that size. You know, Tisdale and Mike Davis are kind of inside-out, lanky players. They don't really have a guy who's going to get on the low block and score with either hand, that sort of thing. So Illinois is a team that, at this point, does have to shoot well to win games against good teams. Even teams like Penn State at home, if Penn State's playing well, as we saw the other night. And if Illinois doesn't change their style, then yes, that's how they have to shoot well to win. If they can tweak things a little bit, if Dimitri McKinney can get in the lane a little bit more frequently, they can take a little bit more, take a few more threes rather than settling for 17-foot jumpers, then I don't think they have to shoot as well to win.
Now, Iowa, mighty Iowa, the powerhouse Iowa Hawkeyes, are currently 7-8. Explain to our listeners why Iowa will make the tournament anyway.
Because I don't even know how to answer that. I was going to try and come up with something funny, but I don't know if there's anything funny about Iowa basketball right now. Not to be too blunt about it, but yeah, no, Iowa's not making the tournament. Although I will say this for Iowa, they have been better this year than probably anyone had reason to expect. I mean, given everything they've lost in the past couple of years in terms of transfer personnel issues, obviously with a first-year coach, there's always going to be a certain amount of adjustment and all that good stuff. I think Iowa's, you know, in a couple Big Ten games, Illinois and Ohio State especially, have played really good teams tough. There's something to be said for that. I mean, it's a rebuilding program. You're not going to get big wins right away. But I think Fran McCaffrey's a pretty good coach, and I think his approach to his first year at Iowa, which is, you know, we're just going to run. We hope people will come watch us, and we hope it's pretty entertaining. We're going to play hard. That's the approach you have to have, and then when he can get out on the recruiting trail a little bit and get some guys who can compete in the Big Ten, I think I will be all right.
Now, speaking of teams that aren't making the tournament, the Indiana Hoosiers. sorry, I have to put it that way, but
yeah, they're bad.
they're not very good, but this Derek Elston thing is fascinating. Summarize this for us and give us the Indiana perspective on how ridiculous this is.
Well, basically, summary-wise, in the closing moments of Indiana's blowout loss to Northwestern on Sunday night, Derek Elston it looked pretty blatantly intentional. He stuck his left leg out to try and go for a little quick trip as Northwestern guard Alex Marcatulio cut across the lane. And it was one of those things that just kind of sort of stupid and unnecessary and one of the, in a bad loss, one of those things that people are going to point to and be like, this team's falling apart, that whole thing. I don't know. The reaction from Indiana fans has been a little bit over the top, and by a little bit over the top, I mean it's been way over the top. A lot of Indiana fans think he should be suspended. A lot of Indiana fans think it's a disgrace to the program. And I get that. You like to see your play, if your team's going to lose by a significant margin at Northwestern, just get blown out by a relatively mediocre Northwestern team, you at least want your guys to lose with a certain level of dignity. I understand that. But if this was an Indiana, if this was a top 15 Indiana team on the road in a tough game and Derek Elston had tripped a guy, Indiana fans would probably be loving him because he competes and he's hard-nosed and he's willing to give and take with the, give as good as he gets with the opponent. And a lot of the, Indiana players that fans loved you back in the day in the glory days were, not dirty players, but they were players who would, throw an elbow at you or trip you or do any number of sneaky little things that, Indiana fans loved. And it was gritty and hard nosed back then and now it's a disgrace. So I think it's a bit of an overreaction. It's a little silly. I think it'll eventually go away. Indiana coach Tom Crean has probably not made it better by, sort of saying, no, he told me he didn't mean to do it. So I'm just going to go with him and everything's going to be dandy. Fans probably want to hear him say, I talked to him. He said it wasn't intentional. I'm not sure if I believe that. We're going to handle it in the house. He was sort of like blanket supportive of Elston. I think fans wanted a little bit more of retribution, but it's the whole thing is overblown and pretty silly in my opinion.
The the point about the team success is I think that's actually really important because, one, that play seems like the sort of thing that Celtics fans loved about the team basically all throughout the 50s through the 90s. You could see Larry Bird pulling something like that. And also, when Bobby Knight was still coaching, I think it was it Dane Fife that threw the ball off Jake Jakes' face like 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was a little upset as an Iowa fan when that happened, obviously, and I think there's also some issue of Tom Coverdale, or it might have also been Fife, doing something really weird, like biting one of our players, something really, really weird, but I didn't hear Indiana fans saying that it was a disgrace to the program, nor did I expect it, because at some point, you just have to, play balls out, and if dirty things happen and they don't happen often, then that's frankly just part of the game.
Right. And the thing with Elston too is, and this is one thing where I think Crean is spot on, is that by all accounts he's a model citizen. He's a good kid. He studies and he does all the things that you want from a collegiate student athlete, cliche or otherwise. And this is really the first incident he's ever had on the court. He's been frustrated this year. He hasn't played as much as he wanted to play. And, Northwestern was kicking Indiana's teeth in at that point. So it's one of those things where do you really need to flip out and ostracize this guy for a mistake he made in the closing, in the last 40 seconds of a blowout game when he was clearly frustrated with the fact, as frustrated as most Indiana fans probably who were throwing things around their house and doing any number of violent in-home activities. I'm almost surprised Indiana fans weren't pleased to see he was just as upset with losing as they were. I mean, if no one had shown anything and no one had done, if it just seemed like Indiana was, okay, we're getting killed again, this happens, whatever, let's get on the bus and go back to Bloomington, then I would imagine Indiana fans would have the same, you know, the constant complaint. If guys aren't playing hard, then they get angry about that too. So I think that there's a little bit of short-sightedness and hypocrisy there. And I think when it's a kid, you know, if it's a guy who's had issues on the court before and has been dirty and thrown elbows and got flagrant fouls, then it's one thing. But if it's a guy who, by all accounts, is a pretty normal, nice kid who's kind of made a dumb mistake in the heat of the moment, then I think you got to kind of let that go.
Now, Eamon, we'll let you go with this wildly ridiculous and over-the-top predictions. Who wins the conference and how many teams the Big Ten get in?
I'll go with Ohio State winning the conference with a close challenge from Purdue and Wisconsin, and I will say that 6 teams get in. I think Minnesota sneaks in. Give us Ohio State, Michigan State, Purdue, Illinois, I'm counting in my head right now, Wisconsin, yeah, Minnesota. I don't think Northwestern's going to get in, and I don't think Michigan's going to get in, and those two teams are probably NIT-bound, and the rest of the conference is, you know, Iowa, Indiana, Penn State. Penn State, despite their impressive conference wins thus far, two straight big home upsets over Michigan State and Illinois, they were so bad in the non-conference schedule, I don't think there's any chance that they get in, even if they, you know, they pull off a couple more upsets like that.
All right, well, we'll take that. I'm surprised the Minnesota pick. But I guess, it, you know, their non-conference is excellent, and they will certainly have a chance in the Big Ten.
I think their non-conference is pretty good. I think they have a decent reputation. It'll be one of those teams at the end of the year, the selection committee, the way that whole room kind of works. Minnesota will be, you know, top of mind if they're a bubble team, and they will get, I would assume if it's a close case, they will probably get the benefit of the doubt now because there's a lot of Big Ten play left, and we'll see how it goes. But I think Minnesota will end up sneaking in the tournament.
Well, I want to thank Eamon for joining us and remind all of our listeners and readers they can catch him every day at ESPN.com. Thanks, Eamon.
All right. Thanks very much. Take care, guys.